instead of you yourself being the focus, like, how will I benefit from this networking? How will I be, you know, glorified, or how will I win by networking? To be able to say, hey, how can I connect some people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, kind of gamify it. And right. I always say, you can be the most interesting person in the room by being interested.
Welcome to the Who You Know Show, where what you know is important, but who you know can make all the difference in your health, wealth, business, career, relationships, and life. I'm super excited because then on this episode, we're sitting down with Mitch Matthews, the creative mind behind the Dream, Think, Do podcast. And he's a successful coach, speaker, and serial entrepreneur. Mitch has dedicated his career to helping people dream bigger, think better, and do more with what they were created to do. So I'm super excited to have you here with us. You were introduced to me by Amberly freaking Lago, right? One of my favorite people in the world.
She's one of the best humans on the planet.
She really is. Yeah. She's a sweetheart. And she told me, she's like, hey, I got Mitch coming. We're going to do some interviews and this, that, and the other. He's my business coach.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, hold on. So like, okay, if you're coaching Amberly,
yeah,
okay, you're doing something right. Okay, you're gonna have what I call a little cash flow. Oh wait, oh man, I'm out of batteries. Hold on.
There we go.
Here, I'm just gonna make it rain.
There it is. Shablam! I love it. Come on.
The batteries didn't work, but listen. So you, obviously, you're doing something right. Okay.
Yeah.
To be coaching people like her. Tell me how you got started in business coaching and so how you started helping people like that.
Absolutely. Such an important question. So when I got started in this, I was coming out of what I call a bad fit job.
Okay.
I was in the pharmaceutical industry.
Okay.
I had some success in the pharmaceutical industry. I'd been in there for about a decade. And when I started in that industry, it was a good fit. It was a high science sale, high relational sale. And then the industry evolved and I evolved. And maybe you've had that happen, but I wound up getting promoted into a bad fit. Mm. And it's one of those things where I'm really grateful for it. At the time, it was brutal.
Right.
But I'm grateful for it because that became a wake-up call. Because the pharmaceutical industry was great, but it's not where I was supposed to spend my life. It wasn't what I was created to do. And that bad fit job was a wake-up call to say, you know what, I got to figure out what I'm meant to do.
Mm.
And so I found out about coaching. My wife actually pointed me towards it. She saw an article in a magazine where a coach had helped an entrepreneur. And she's like, I think this is what you do. You should go look and see. I didn't even know this thing existed. You should go look and see what that is. And wound up getting into coaching. And to be perfectly honest, I went and got some coach training that had no business training at all. And so I came out confident as a coach and completely incompetent to building a business of my own.
Mm.
And so I floundered. I really messed up. I didn't do well. But then I started to figure things out. I did some of the things we talked about that you talk about all the time. Who should I be learning from? How can I have mentors that truly can point me in the right direction?
And who were a couple of those mentors?
I started to find out, you know, for me, one of the things that I realized when I was in that bad fit job was that, you know, almost all of my network was still in pharma. And I realized like, oh no, you know, I've got this pretty extensive network in basically a group of people that I don't think that I want to stay in. Like, how do I do this? And that I think is an important conversation to have, because oftentimes when people are thinking about doing something new and they start to look around to say, who can I learn from? A lot of the people that are close at hand are not those people. And so sometimes people will realize or maybe even start to beat themselves up to go, I don't know the right people, therefore I am disqualified.
That's not true.
Right, it's not true. So what I had to do was give myself permission to say, you know what, I'm going to meet some new people.
Got it.
And I don't know if all of them will be able to help me, but maybe I'll be able to help some of them in the process.
What was your approach during that process to reach out to those people? And like, how did you get them to pay attention to you, right?
Right, on a very specific approach at that time, because I was doing all of this on the side.
Okay.
You know, I joke about it, but at the time we were living a sitcom life because my wife was staying home. We had two boys and my wife was staying home with our boys in that season. And so we had a sitcom life, which meant single income, two children, oppressive mortgage. right? And so, exactly. So I couldn't just quit my pharmaceutical job to start this business. I had to build it on the side. Okay. And so that also meant I had to network on the side. I had to start building relationships on the side. I didn't have a ton of time. But what I realized was, as a pharmaceutical rep at the time, as a specialty rep at that time, I had a large territory, but I was almost always in town on Fridays. Mm. And there was a Panera. I don't know. You guys have Paneras in Dallas? Yep. So there was a Panera not too far from my house. And I realized 7 o'clock on Friday mornings, I could pretty much predict I was going to be home. And that was only a few blocks from my house. So I said, I'm going to be sitting at a particular table at a Panera every Friday morning at 7 a.m. And I'm going to try to get an interesting person to meet with me once a week for a year. Mm. And basically that's what I did, was I started to reach out to some of the interesting people that I knew at the time or thought were interesting and said, I'm just trying to meet interesting people. There's no sales pitch. I'm just curious. I want to know more about you. I want to know more about your journey. Would you be one of my interesting people?
That is so, okay, I want to stop you there, because yeah. I did something similar to that. That helped build my career where it is today. So years ago, I started sitting down with job seekers. That was actually my target market.
Yeah.
And I was sitting down with these job seekers and just figuring out what their challenges were, what their struggles were, what they were going through.
Yeah.
See if I could find any commonalities.
Sure, absolutely. Market research, but relationship building, right?
100%. And yeah. Then I was like, okay, well, I don't know exactly how I could help them, but let me go sit down with recruiters and hiring managers and career coaches, right? And I would sit down with those folks and I would say, hey, I got a group of job seekers over here, right? And so for me, it was just, if I could connect dots.
Absolutely. Right? That's such a way to bring value, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's one of those things that if you were willing to be out there, actually being legitimately curious, I'm sure you weren't just meeting people to connect them up. You were legitimately curious about those people. They felt that authentic curiosity, right? So of course, they're going to tell you more about themselves. And then I'm guessing that you started to think, all right, it's almost that game of memory that you used to play, like, okay, there's a cow, there's a star, there's a moon. It's like, where was the cow again? It's like connecting those dots. I'm an introvert, actually. Most people find that hard to believe, but I'm an introvert.
I'm actually an introvert, too.
Are you?
I'm like, an introverted extrovert. So, like, if I'm in a, let's say I go to a conference where I don't know anybody, there's a bunch of people everywhere, I'm actually very quiet.
Yep.
I don't like the networking. It's funny, because I'm pretty good at networking, I would think.
Yep.
But I actually don't like the whole small talk, the what do you do?
Yep.
I can't stand it.
Exactly.
I'm like, I would rather add value to that conference, be part of that conference, volunteer at that conference, be a part of it.
Yeah.
I would rather be a creator than a consumer.
Yeah.
I want to be a piece of it, like of the actual conference or group or whatever it is. But yeah, in normal situations, I'm very introverted like that. If I go and I don't have a place.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, absolutely. And I love that you gamified that season of networking to be able to say, all right, instead of you yourself being the focus, like, how will I benefit from this networking? How will I be, glorified, or how will I win by networking? To be able to say, hey, how can I connect some people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, kind of gamify it. And I always say, you can be the most interesting person in the room by being interested, right? And so you show people.
You know Chaz Wilson?
I do not yet.
You don't know Chaz? Okay, I love how you do that. That's pretty good. I'll connect you with Chaz Wilson.
Yeah.
He's actually the CEO of Master Networks.
Love it.
Here in Dallas. And it's a, it's a national group. But yeah, he says something similar to that. Be more interested and interesting.
Yeah. Well, all of it applies, like, right? All of it applies. And that truly is one of those things of being able to bring value by connecting people. And I always say, as an introvert, I have to motivate myself. I mean, God's great sense of humor is, as a speaker, my day job often will be standing in a room of 300 to 3,000 strangers. As an introvert, I think that's hilarious, right? But I've also realized, like, to your point, part of the way I navigate that is by bringing value to a room. And you can do that from the stage. You can do that. You don't have to be on the stage, though, by being legitimately curious, by trying to connect. I always say, try to connect three people in the room, and then I'm out. You know, if I'm not on stage, that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to bring value by saying, all right, who in this room should meet? And then to be a part of that. And if I make those connections quick, then I could leave quickly. If I, it takes a little bit more time, that just means I meet more people. But it allows that inner introvert in me to find purpose. Because I'm with you. My inner introvert's like, what a waste of time to do small talk. But to be able to go, wait, you know, I'm going to stick until I can introduce three people, connect three people in the room. Then my inner introvert's like, okay, I can work with that.
Yeah, that works. That's a good, like you said, gamifying it. So when you were sitting down at the Panera Bread, and you know, having these meetings, tell me more about that. Yeah. What followed?
Absolutely.
After that?
So, you know, what's interesting about that is, you know, in that one particular year, I wound up, I didn't get every weekend, but I got 45 different meetings in.
Oh wow!
And what's 45? Wild about that? Yeah. What's
in,
wild
in how
about
long?
That? In a year.
Oh, in a year. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what's wild about that is I look back and some of those conversations, that was the only time I had a conversation with that individual. But some of those people became great friends. Some of those people became people that I was in a mastermind with and have been in a mastermind with for now almost 20 years. People who have inspired me, equipped me, and it made all the difference. In fact, one of those people was one of the people who sat me down. He was a seasoned entrepreneur. I was not at the time. And he knew I was struggling. And we sat at that Panera, I'll never forget. And I was lamenting. I was straight up, I was complaining, right, Trevor? Like, nothing's working. Nobody's buying anything from me. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. And he looked around and he said, well, do you know what you're selling? And I said, what? Like, you know, of course, at the time I was trying to sell coaching, trying to sell speaking. I was like, of course I know what I'm selling. And he's like, do you? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, we walk in this Panera, do you know what to do? And I looked around and I said, are you being rhetorical right now? He's like, no, legitimately, do you know what to do? And I said, well, I walk in that door. I know to walk to the cash register. I know to look to the menu. I understand there's options. I make my choice. The person greets me. They process it. Then I sit down. He goes, yep. What's your process? What is specifically, he said, what's your sequence? And I said, what do you mean? And he's like, well, Panera has a sequence. Do you have a sequence? You think it's obvious, but is it? And when I started to think, I was like, okay, well, one, how do people find me? How do then people engage with me? What do I do if they reach out? What do I do next? What's that first conversation look like? What am I actually selling? Panera's got a menu. Do I have a menu? No, I don't. And he was just like, think about your sequence. And what's beautiful about that now is, you know, I actually started to have, you know, I started to figure out what we now call the six-figure sequence, which is legitimately like a checklist for coaches and speakers to be able to go, do you have this in place? Move on. Do you have this in place? It's basically a to-do list to be able to say how to build a profitable business. But it's all based on that conversation around, do you have a sequence? Because there is a sequence, and most coaches, most speakers, they want to sell coaching. They want to sell speaking, but they don't have a sequence. They just need the sequence.
So, yeah, I'm all about systems, right?
Right,
and processes, and you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So if you can leverage people like yourself that have been there, done that,
right?
And go, okay, cool. Because I feel like there's a lot of people, especially since the pandemic, a lot of new coaching programs and businesses and things have launched. And I think that a lot of them are probably like me where, you know, I'm just winging it, trying to figure it all out, you know?
Right.
Just, you know, do. Right, I think you said dream, think, do.
Right.
Like you're just doing.
Just doing.
And figuring it out and making mistakes and which is good. I'm an advocate of that.
Big fan of that approach. Yeah.
Because there's nothing that will teach you that the stove is hot like burning your hand on the stove.
That's right.
Right? But I would rather watch someone else burn their hand.
Right.
And go, ooh, I'm not touching that.
Duly noted. Right? Exactly.
Yeah, like,
and
I don't
go,
want to
I can learn faster and I don't have to learn with as much pain. Right.
Correct.
I'm with you. Like, I'm a big fan of experimenting, all those things. But if you can learn from somebody and learn faster and go further, why wouldn't you? Right.
100%.
So, yep.
Okay. So tell me some of the biggest I'm trying to think of, with your clients, I'm sure there have been some commonalities.
Yes.
Right? Biggest mistakes that you see businesses making.
Yeah.
That's a common theme that you're like, pretty much 9 times out of 10, this business is doing it.
Right. Right. Well, you know, I'll go, if you're okay with it, I'll go one iteration more specific.
Okay.
And let's talk about the individual. Because a lot of the coaching that I do 50% of my coaching is with coaches and speakers. 50% of my coaching is with executives, founders, entrepreneurs, founders. What did I say? CEOs, executive founders.
You know, big people.
Right, right, right. You exactly. Know, like, making big decisions.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
of
the
that.
Big people.
And what's interesting about that is that, you know, I coach highly successful people.
Right.
Now, what's interesting about that is people go, well, wait, if they're are already highly successful, why do they need a coach? Right. And that's oftentimes one of the big mistakes people make is to be able to say, well, if you have success in one area, does that mean you're good? Right. Like, and you know, like a lot of wildly successful people have coaches, sometimes multiple coaches, to be able to help them go to the next level, identify blind spots, all of those things. But what's interesting is that I find, especially working with highly successful people and have been able to do that for over 2 decades, one of the things that hides out in people's blind spots is when you have success in one area, it's harder to allow yourself to be a novice in other areas.
Okay. So you're saying, hey, I've got some success. So internally, for me to start at the beginning and be a newbie.
Right.
Right.
That's really hard. And yeah. It's not natural. Exactly. But at the same time, though, it's oftentimes allowing yourself that space, that permission.
Well, that's where I'm at.
Right.
That's where I'm at. Let me tell you this. That's exactly where I'm at. Okay. At the podcasting game, got that locked down.
Yeah, you're killing
it. Like, don't even worry about that.
Killing.
Cool. I've been doing like 600 episodes, right. Whatever. Okay. And I've made a lot of the mistakes too, by the way.
Absolutely.
But I learned from anyway. So, but in that world, in that space, I got it locked down. No worries. But in the, you know, keynote speaking or from stage and stuff like that, professional speaking, I'm new there.
Right.
That's a new space for me. And so I gotta humble myself and say, okay, I got this, but how can I leverage this to help me here as well?
Yep.
And that's what kind of we were talking behind stage.
Yeah, absolutely. We were rocking strategy. And rolling on that conversation.
Yeah, we were doing some coaching, okay? Mitch was helping me.
I can't help myself because I see all the value that you've put out there. I see all the wisdom in you. And it's like, you deserve to be paid well for that. I know you're paid well in other areas of your business, which is fantastic. But now it's time for you to get paid well for this knowledge because people do value it more if they pay for it. And so as a speaker, as a coach, it's interesting, you know, you have built out an incredible platform that's allowed you to build relationship, build rapport, build trust with a group of people. And you have done that for all the right reasons, right? You are curious. You legitimately are having these conversations to learn, to help others, all of that. So the motivation behind this is beautiful, but now it's also, like you were saying, time to take things to the next level because over those 600 conversations, you've learned a lot that you have applied to your own life, your own business, 100%. And that's great. It's obviously paying off. But now it's time to take that knowledge and speak to different audiences in different ways and to get paid well to do it. And that makes all the difference.
Absolutely. And we were talking behind the stage about just a strategy, and you were helping me come up with some ideas.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so one of the ideas I had was to go back and leverage those relationships, 600 people that have been on the show, and reach out
to them. And yep.
Yeah, yeah. And try to re-engage some of it, because some of them, honestly, it's been a while. So I know they'll remember who I am, but it's been a while. So.
Yeah.
You know, re-engaging those relationships and nurturing those relationships, reaching out and really asking for help or, to your point, for feedback.
Yep.
That's what you said.
We talked about that. You know, you were thinking through, brainstorming through the idea of reaching back out to people that you've had on the show or people that you've connected with over the years, to be able to ask for some help because it's time for you to get on stages, right? More stages and to get paid well for that, right? And one of the things that I talk about and building relationship, connecting, much of the passion areas that you have of growing out that network. So you are known and that you know others, right? That's beautiful. But oftentimes, if you're going to reach out and ask for help, that's a great thing to do. But oftentimes, it's better on your first ask to ask for opinion mm-hmm. as opposed to action. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is that, like, as an example, one of the things you thought about was to reach out and say, hey, I would like to be on some stages. Do you guys know of any stages where it would be appropriate for me to speak? Are you guys looking for any speakers? That is action, asking for action. And that is a valid ask. It's an ask you deserve to ask, right?
100%.
But that is also a harder ask, right? There's going to be people who are, maybe they're not involved with conferences. Maybe they're not engaged in selecting speakers. Maybe they don't have their own events. So that's a harder ask. So asking for an action is valid. It's important. You deserve to do it. But asking for an opinion is a much easier response. Mm-hmm. So to be able to say, and you don't want just general opinions. So I'm a big fan of saying, hey, reach out to this group of people. Say, hey, I hope you're doing fantastic. You've got 600 plus people on the list. So it might be hard to do it individually, but you might have a few people that you had really good relationships with, or they've got a network where you know there's a higher chance that they could help you out. So in some of these cases, it's going to make sense to do an individual ask versus a global ask. Mm-hmm. But to be able to ask, say, hey, I'm sure they will remember you, but reacquaint them with your show and how maybe you interacted with them. But to be able to say, hey, I'm working on taking my speaking to the next level. You can let them know you've been speaking at events. You often speak on these topics. But you're working on a new keynote and you're deciding on what's the best title for that keynote. Because titles are important, right?
You want to grab
people's attention. Yeah. And I even put that in the email. Like, I know you know having a good title that makes people go, ooh, I wonder what that is important. So to say, hey, I know you have experience in this area. I would really value your opinion. Mm. I'm thinking about this, this, or this for titles. Again, the audience that I'm thinking about speaking to is this. So you're informing them who you want to be speaking to, right? And then you say, of those three, what do you think is the best?
I love that.
Right? And it's legit. Like, this is not manipulation. This is not asking your list for something and then you land on them quickly to hard sell them on something. You're legitimately open to their feedback.
Something,
and people love to give their opinion.
Something else that that I've always been an advocate of is anytime I ask for anything, I always like to give first something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it's going to be. In this case, I was thinking about, I actually have an engagement group for social media.
You know,
people trade engagement.
Yeah.
To help boost the algorithm and all of that, right?
Right.
And there's like, I don't know, 150 people in there that they all work together and collaborate and do all that kind of stuff. So I was thinking about maybe offering and saying, hey, like, if you want to join the group.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think you could do that, but I would just encourage you, especially on the list of people that we're talking about, mm-hmm. right? You have actually already brought value mm-hmm. to right. those people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So it's that I've worked for them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, 100%,
right. And you got people on the podcast.
Oh,
you introduced them to new people.
I expanded their audience.
That's exactly right. All that, so I love that heart to bring value,
but you've
done that with this group of people. Plus, it's also one of those where when you're asking for an opinion, that is also saying, hey, I value your input. I value your wisdom. You're also not asking for them to spend hours and hours of time with you. Mm-hmm. You're just looking to get their input. And it's interesting. I always say it's what we call the backstage pass approach.
Okay.
It allows people a little bit of backstage in your life. Because, when people look at your life, they look at Trevor and go, he doesn't have a need in the world. He's got it all buttoned up. He has every answer. He knows exactly what he's doing, right? But when you let people backstage, it gives them a sense of connection. It gives them a sense of ownership. I use this example. My son, one of his friends got tickets to go to a concert. And he asked my son to go. And my son's like, I'm not really into the band. I don't know. But he found out that they have backstage passes. Now, it was like a Christian rock band. So when I heard about it, and my son was in high school, I'm like, yeah, this is probably pretty safe, right? but he's like, I'll go because my buddy has tickets and they got backstage passes. It's kind of a big deal. He's like, but I'm not all that excited. But he comes home. He's wearing the T-shirts, freaking out, loved the band. I was like, how was it? He goes, it was great. I said, how was the concert? He was like, it was really good. I said, but man, you seem fired up about the band. He goes, I love this band. I was like, why? He said, well, it was so much fun backstage. Like, I got to meet their family, got to meet their wives. We were riding around on scooters back there. He saw them as real people. He got backstage, and that gave him a sense of ownership.
Right.
He felt a part of the family, right?
That makes sense, yeah.
Let people in. Let people get backstage with you, because if they feel a sense of ownership, they will be that much more likely to also help you spread the word when it's time to take action.
That's really good. You actually got my wheels turning, too, thinking about my own audience, too.
Right.
Right? And allowing them behind the curtain.
Yeah, because they want to know. Like,
and they want to help, too.
They do. Absolutely. Like, your audience, the people who are listening to you right now, they are going, oh, my gosh. Yeah, Trevor needs help. I'm in, right? Because you have been helping them week after week, right? Some of these people are just waiting for you to ask for a way to help.
I know. I've been like, I had this kind of revelation, I guess. Like, man. I'm sitting on a gold mine just because I've already done the work.
Yeah.
The work's already
been
done.
You've proven yourself as valuable. You have proven yourself that you are in this for all the right reasons.
Yep.
Nobody's worried about, hey, what's Trevor's angle,
yeah.
right? Like, if anybody wants to look, they can look deeper and go, real deal, you've proven this over time, right? It's not this thing of like, oh, what, he's just switching and doing this now. It's like, nope, you have proven yourself. No. And you've done it, again, for all the right reasons.
It's just the next evolution, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people will be like, hey, I haven't listened to Trevor forever. Now let's get him on stages so more people can hear. So I do think, you've got one audience of people that you've had on as guests, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a whole other audience of people that are your tribe that are listening to this, they're engaging with your content, and they are probably fist pumping right now. Hopefully we're not gonna cause any car accidents, but like there are some people fist pumping right now saying, yes, Trevor needs to be on stages. Yes, more
Love
people
it.
Need to be learning from him, because the podcast platform is such a powerful platform, right? I mean, there are billions of YouTube channels, but there are only about 3 million podcasts. And of that, there's only about 10% of those podcasts that are active.
Right.
So that's still a lot of podcasts, but that's not a lot of podcasts compared to the billions of channels on YouTube.
A lot of people do, like, you know, they'll start and they get maybe like 10 episodes in, and they find out how much work it is. It's a lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
And
that's why most, like,
they burn out.
Yep, absolutely. Literally about 88 to 90% of the podcasts on Apple are less than 10 episodes.
Yeah.
Right? So you've already brought a ton of value this way. And this is a great way to bring value, connect with a tribe, grow those relationships. But you know there's something else entirely when you can be in a room of 30 people or 300 people or 3,000 people.
The impact.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And to see it, like to be with them in the room.
And something about
such a different thing.
Like we talked about, I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
Introverted extrovert.
Right. You're an ambivert probably.
Yeah, and but yeah, and I used to run from stages.
Yeah.
I used to run from public speaking, literally. I used to, I'm not even kidding. So growing up, I had some issues in school, was definitely a troubled child, was in and out of juvenile detention facilities, had a lot of stuff going on at the house. Anyway, I remember in school, I would go in the lunchroom, and they'd let me out just for lunch. They had me in this class that was where they put disabled kids and they put kids with anger issues and stuff like that. And they had a padded room in there.
Oh, my.
Uh-huh. And then they would let you go for lunch. So you're in there kind of locked down all day, and then they go for lunch. Anyways, where I'm going with this is I go in the lunchroom, and I wouldn't know anybody, and I felt like I felt out of place.
Yep.
I felt like everybody was looking at me like I was some kind of freak or whatever. So I would go hide out in the
in
bathroom.
Oh, wow, in the bathroom.
I'd eat my lunch in the bathroom, yeah.
Wow.
And that feeling had started to creep in later on in life whenever I would get opportunities for public speaking.
Yeah.
That overwhelming sense of anxiety.
Yeah.
That, like, everybody's looking at me like I'm some kind of, freak or whatever.
Right.
I don't know. Like judgment. That ultimate judgment, right?
Yep.
Is what it is. It's the fear of other people's opinions,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And it was a huge, huge, huge issue for me. And I used to hide. And literally, I'd go hide in bathrooms as an adult. And I remember thinking one day I left this meeting as an adult, and I was hiding in the bathroom. And I was, like, so ashamed. Because I had something that could help the people that were there.
Yeah, 100%.
And I let my fear keep me from helping people.
Yeah.
And I'm in the bathroom like a coward, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this has got to stop.
Yep.
And so I kind of drew that line in the sand. And, you know, I've been making steps ever since. But
I just so appreciate you sharing that story, because I would imagine that a lot of people that meet you have a hard time even believing that to be true, right? But it's one of those that I so honor that transparency and authenticity, because that is so powerful. Plus, I find, like, you know, I've been coaching and speaking for about 20 years and been helping other coaches and speakers for at least 10. And one of the things that I find, and this sometimes makes people go, wait, what did he just say? Is I say, you know, from my own experience, but more so from, you know, speakers that I've interacted with and speakers that I've helped train, oftentimes the best speakers are the ones who don't really want to be speakers, right? They are not up there because they feel like they deserve the limelight. They are up there because they have a message that's important enough for them to push through the fear or the, I don't want to be in the spotlight, but they're willing because they feel so, this message is so important.
Yep.
They're willing to step into that anyway. I don't know about you, but I always say, I want to help as many people as possible and be known by as few people as possible.
Oh.
That's like my inner introvert's like, okay, I can do that, right?
That's true. I want to go to the grocery store.
Exactly.
And I don't want anybody to, I don't want any.
That's exactly right.
The worst. My introvert itself is like, when I see somebody, because, you know, I'm all on social media and all this kind of stuff, but when I see somebody that they recognize me in real life, and I'm like, I'm kind of introverted.
Right.
I'm kind of quiet. Exactly. I'm like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
And they're expecting this, like,
this what Trevor. They saw on stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's exactly right.
They're expecting that. And I'm like, hey, how's it going? I'm kind of like.
But what I love about that, though, is as a speaker, you know, you can even speak to that, to be able to go, hey, when you get up on stage, you're going to deliver it a different energy, not because you're being fake on stage. You just know that as a part of your goal of delivering value to this audience, you know, one of the ways you're going to do that is to deliver with some energy, with some belief, all of those things. And to say, when you get down off that stage, to give yourself permission to be an introvert, to not necessarily demand the spotlight, to have to be so energetic.
Yeah.
That's not you being somebody else. That's just you understanding the room and the situation.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing.
It's like an athlete, you know, you go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
And when they get in that locker room, they're like,
exactly.
That is not who they are every day.
Yeah, you hope they don't act that way in the grocery store, because small children are run, right?
Like, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. You don't want them like,
they understand the stage they're on and they are performing at that level.
Correct.
And then they can toggle that back in other stages. And I think that's also, you know, we're getting into some of the mental traffic, I think, of there's a lot of people out there that have an important message, but they don't pursue it because they think, well, I'm not that person all the time. Well, you don't need to be that person all the time. That's, you know, again, understanding the stage literally that you're on that allows you to say, I'm going to deliver at that level, that energy level, or that focus in that situation, but then give yourself permission to be you in a different scenario, to be able to get off that stage and not have to deliver at that same energy level is just fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I have another question for you.
Yes.
Through your years of coaching and helping, you know, business owners and entrepreneurs and people like myself to grow, what has been one of your biggest mistakes that you've made, or something that you were like, man, if I could go back in time, this is where I definitely would have pivoted or.
Yeah.
Or,
such a good question. And, you know, I've made a bunch of mistakes.
Right.
A bunch of them. Right. But I would say, you know, it's such an interesting thing, but it comes back to giving yourself permission to be a novice. I mean, like, and I think one of the reasons why that for me, it's such an important topic for my coaching clients, because I realize that's also where I played small for a long time. I kind of waited. The only time I would give myself permission to get into a new space or try something new is if I was an expert. But you don't start an expert, yeah. right? You have to give yourself that permission to start, to be a novice. And I think in our culture, it's interesting. I don't know about you, but I grew up in a small town in Iowa. And I was not athletic. I was not good at sports. But when you're in a small town in Iowa, you go out for everything because you're needed. Like if all the boys don't show up, that boys team doesn't play because they don't have enough players. So I tried everything, right? And I very quickly figured out that I was good at certain things and not good at other things, right? But when I think about it now, you know, so often, you know, our kids are forced to be an expert. They're forced to specialize into one sport so quickly. And it's such an example of what happens to us in our careers to be able to go, okay, well, I'm going to pick this track and I'm going to stay on this track. And to deviate from that track, boy, that feels like a really big risk, right? But to be able to go, you know what? What if you gave yourself permission to not, you know, if you're feeling that need to try something new or to expand your horizons a little bit, I always say that doesn't mean you need to quit and abruptly take a blind leap of faith. I'm more of a fan of small steps of faith.
Yes.
Over time, I interviewed somebody for Dream Think Do named Sean Askenosi, and Sean was a very successful trial attorney, wildly successful, like almost unbeatable. And he started to find over time, got into his 50s, and started to realize like he didn't have the same passion for law that he once did. Now, nobody else knew it because he was still winning and he was still unbeatable. But he knew like the foundation was starting to crack.
Yeah.
And so for him, what he did was he said, you know what? I'm not going to quit law, but I am going to give myself permission to try some new things. So he started taking some night classes, which, you know, is kind of notable. He's from Missouri. So for him to show up in some night classes, I'm sure was a little bit, you know, interesting, caused a stir. But he tried some cooking classes. And then he found one class on chocolate that he particularly enjoyed. He just really found a connection to chocolate. And then he started to get into the making of chocolate, like this kind of follow the bean. And he started to realize, like, interesting, a lot of the growers of these beans are being mistreated. And so he found some injustice. And so he just gave himself permission to take a vacation and go to one of these growers and find out more about the bean and what it went into, you know, actually putting the bean in the ground and growing, but also like, what's the business look like? And he started to figure out like he had a passion for not only making chocolate, but kind of the bean up and down the line. And so he started with his daughter. They just started making what they call small batch chocolate. Didn't quit his job, didn't stop being an attorney, but just tried some stuff and kept experimenting over time. Gave himself permission to be a novice. He readily admits some people thought he was a little crazy, but like, we're just going to try it. And what I love about this is that took off. Askenosi chocolate has taken off. Now it's one of Oprah's favorite chocolate brands.
Oh, okay.
It's he's been featured in Fortune. He's been featured in Business. He's been featured in Fast Company. Because they're doing amazing things. Now he's making chocolate full time, right?
Wow.
But that wasn't a blind leap. It was small leaps over time, right?
Especially if you don't have the safety net to take a leap like that.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
A lot of people, it's like, if you don't have the cash flow,
right? Exactly.
The reserves,
right?
Okay, and you make that jump. You might be hitting some rocks on the way down and,
right.
You know, and you're probably going to hit some rocks on the way down anyway.
Anyway, right. Exactly.
It's going to hurt and you're going to get some bruises and
you're
going to
learn from them, right? But it's also that.
But are you going to survive?
Yep.
Right. Like if you're not ready to just jump, don't jump.
But experiment. Give yourself that permission to be a newbie. And that's, I mean, in some ways, that's the reason why I'm a coach and a speaker now is I kind of took that same approach with coaching. I just started to do it on the side, started to do the speaking on the side, started to experiment. Some of those things went down in flames, but other things really took off and we were able to launch a coaching and speaking business pretty quickly, and now helping other coaches and speakers to do that too.
So I actually own a financial services business.
Yeah.
And but what's next for me is that, you know, I am excited because now I'm in a position where I get to teach other agents and advisors in the financial services realm.
Yeah.
I get to teach them how to do compliance-friendly podcasting.
Huge.
Which is, it is huge.
That's a big deal. That's a really big deal.
The compliance is the barrier,
yeah.
Right? And I've navigated it, and I've mapped it out, and I've got the blueprint.
Yep.
And so, and I've got the track record and the authority in that space. They're like, oh, right. Wow, he's been doing this for years, right?
Yep.
So that's kind of the next step or journey for me.
That's exciting.
Plus the speaking, and I've got a couple books coming out, and I got a lot of stuff
going on.
There's
a lot
going
on,
man. There's a lot
going on.
It's
good. It's good.
But yeah, so coaching is going to be a new thing for me.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's going to be a new thing for me.
And what's beautiful about it is I would hope you would roll out the coaching, not because you need the income, but you know that if you're moving into these areas of helping others to create their podcasts, you know, those kinds of things, then coaching is going to allow you to deliver value at a different level.
Correct.
Which also is going to allow you to get paid at a different level for that. Right? Like, you've got the podcast where you can offer this for free. You offer this for free and people can participate. And that's fantastic. It's a way for you to bring value. But for some of those people who want to move faster, they want to go further, they can engage you either as a speaker at their event or as a coach. And it will actually help them to do that. And they'll need to pay for that, right?
Well,
that's a beautiful thing.
And I heard you and Amberly earlier today talking, and you were speaking about the fact that the more people pay, the more they pay attention.
Yep, 100%.
Right?
Yep, they've got to have skin in the game.
Yeah, and so I already know, because I've been coaching for a long time. I just haven't been charging for it. I've been doing it just, you know, I've been...
Because you've got a heart for it.
I've just been, helping people. So now I'm going to change things up. But I also know that that's a big reason why there's a small percentage who actually apply and take action, because it was free.
Yep.
If it's free, it's like, eh.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
But if you pay, you know, $5,000 for it, you saw the value in it from the get-go. So
absolutely,
you are going to take action. You are invested in. You're investing in yourself. You're going to take action.
Yep.
So I'm excited about that, because I also know that I'll be able to actually help more people.
Yep.
Because if it's free, you're really not helping. I mean, you're... Yeah.
You're getting started. It's a really, really good appetizer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know about you, but I'll go to a reception and you can really enjoy good appetizers, right? And that a podcast really serves as an example of value by going, that really allows me to taste something. That allows me to go, I like that. I like the taste of that. I want more of that,
right?
But then to be able to go, okay, then you can go a next step in that relationship of offering coaching or offering some training and those kinds of things. That allows people to get into more of a meal, spend more time with you, get more value, but they also get more energy. They get more equipped. They get more encouraged. So they can then take more action.
So what would your feedback be? Okay.
Yeah. I love this.
If I was going to create a coaching program for agents and advisors to do compliance-friendly podcasts.
Yeah.
Okay. I've thought about different, packages. Like, I thought about a do-it-yourself course.
Yeah.
And then a mastermind to go with it.
Yeah.
One-on-one coaching.
Yeah.
Talk to me. What are your thoughts?
Yes.
Yes.
You can do all those things. Part of it starts with...
Where would you start?
This is interesting. So, and I love this conversation. This is a great conversation. I'm glad we got 4 hours, right? but one of the things, this surprises people, because there are different strategies for doing exactly what you're talking about. But what it starts with is, what's your vision for your life and your business?
So good. I love that you said that.
Right? Because it's one of those, you could sell the crap out of all of that.
Yeah.
But what do you want your day to look like?
Yep. I love that you said that. That's
right?
So good. And for the audience listening, what he just said, that's so good. Because let me tell you something. For me, I work really hard for freedom. I want my freedom. And I don't want to be chained to a desk or anything like that. And so for me, I'm thinking about, like, the online course sounds really good, because it's, you create it, you take the time to and invest in creating it, but then after that, it's pretty much evergreen. And
and then what you could do, like, if we could dive into more specifics, but like an entry level, a course is always a great place to start, because that allows people to get started,
right?
But then what you can do is then you can offer, and it doesn't need to be everybody, but you can offer additional coaching,
right?
Different types of packages to help people go through the program, go faster, go deeper, but that's at a premium.
Sure.
Right? And it's one of those things where that's why I always say, start with the vision and then build the business to serve the vision.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to build the business and hope the vision works out, because it never works that way. Mm-hmm. Most people wind up, if they start that way, they wind up creating a business they wind up hating. And almost everybody that I'm helping, right, they're oftentimes in a journey like mine where they're trying to get out of a bad fit job. So the last thing I want to do is help them create a business that pays them well and becomes a bad fit job, right? I want them to say, hey, what do I want life to look like? What do I want that freedom to feel like? And then build it to that. So then to be able to say, if you've got your online program, fantastic. That can serve a whole lot of people. But then you can charge a premium for that one-on-one coaching because you know you don't want to do a ton of it.
Right.
Right? And you may only want to do it one day
so
a week.
That's so true. That's so true.
So like my coaching, I only coach Tuesdays and Wednesdays. That's all I do. So I charge a premium because I run out of slots pretty quickly. So it's one of those where what's beautiful about that is then the rest of my week is mine, right? And that's oftentimes get filled in by podcasting and speaking at events. But Tuesdays and Wednesdays are when I'm coaching. So my wife knows I'm going to be in my office on Tuesdays and Wednesdays for coaching, right? It's predictable and all that. But then when I'm sold out of slots, what that means, I need to raise my prices.
Right? That's good. Hold on. That's on my drop. Let's go.
Right? And that happens quite often. I have at the bottom of every proposal, I'll say these prices are valid till the end of this month. That's not manipulation.
Yeah.
It's one of those that I sometimes will have a couple of price increases in a year.
Yeah, if you sell out.
Right, exactly.
That's supply and demand.
That's I don't know about you, but I was not great at that, you know, the economics classes in college, but that was one concept that I got.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you have to look at yourself. Okay, so if you're the business, because you are,
right?
You're the coach.
Yep.
Okay, there's only so many hours that you have available.
And,
and so your hours, the rate for those hours is depending on the demand.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah, if you have a line out the door,
people,
you know, wrapping around the building, people trying to talk to you, right? It's the same reason why Tony Robbins can get $1,000 for a picture or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Like
or
somebody
charge, $50,000 for a weekend.
Yeah, right.
It's like, but you also know it's that whole thing of, part of the reason why you can do that is because of the relationship he's built.
Yep.
But also part of the reason why you can do that is he's also got a $1,000 online course that you can watch. And when you watch that, you're like, okay, I get it. You know, and the same thing, like you could offer an online training for people that are like, you know what? I'm going to do it myself. And some of those people are going to get in there and go, I can do this. I can follow every step. And Trevor's got me guided. I'm good.
Yep.
And then some people are going to get in there and go, I need Trevor's help. I want to go faster. I want to go further. I'm going to invest in that help.
So, that's so true, right? Yeah. What you just said right there. Yeah, because there's a lot of people that will get into the program and immediately go, dang, I need I need some guidance.
Yeah, and that's not wrong. Yeah. That's just beauty. And for some people, they're not going to need it. And for some people, you know, it's crazy, but some people are going to invest and then never open it. It's nuts. I know I went to Tony Robbins program and you know, gotten to speak at Brendon Burchard events. And, you know, they will often say that only about 10 to 20% of people will even open the online training that they bought, let alone finish it.
That's insane.
It's crazy. And we're talking about at any price point, right? And Tony Robbins, Brendon Burchard, they sell out their events and know that 10 to 20% of people who have paid for a ticket will not show up.
Oh my gosh.
Right? Because some people will just bail.
I went to Tony Robbins conference out here in Dallas. And I got to tell you, I love Tony Robbins. I really, really do. He's the real deal.
Yeah.
But man, as an introvert,
I
hated that event.
It is definitely not an introvert-friendly environment.
Oh my gosh, everybody's jumping up and down. Yeah.
What is hilarious, too, because I know, like at Brendon's events, it's so funny because you go to the event and there's thousands of people. You go back to the green room and it is quiet and almost everybody's introverted. They might be having a little quiet conversation, but it's hilarious. It's just like all the extroverts or the extrovert environment is out there, but you go backstage into the green room, it's almost all introverts.
It was insane. They're jumping around. It was like a cult. Everybody was like, and I'm like, I was like, okay, first I'm like, okay, let me keep an open mind.
Right.
Trevor, let me keep an open mind.
Yes, exactly.
Right. What were you talking about? Be okay being a student or
be a novice,
be a right? Newbie. I'm like, I'm gonna come here and I'm kind of like just.
Yep.
And day one went by, and then day two, I'm like, why are we still jumping around? Like, can we stop dancing? It was like a club.
I'm like,
I want to learn.
Yeah,
I'm here to learn.
Can we get back to the note taking, please?
I don't. he'd jump up and down. And I get it. Like, yeah. He's the best. I think that, well, you know, what's that Maya Angelou saying? People won't care what you did, or but they'll care how you made them feel.
Yep, absolutely. 100%. Yep. Right?
I'm messing it up.
No. I think you know what I'm talking about. Hit the point. Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly.
They'll remember how you made them feel.
Yep.
And he's the best at that.
He absolutely is.
He's the best at that.
If there's any, like,
ES. What did you learn? I don't know.
Yeah.
How was it? Oh, it was amazing.
Amazing.
Whoa, look at these pictures of us jumping up and down in the club.
Tony Robbins. and that's one of the things. And he'll talk about it. That at the foundation of everything he teaches has got to be state change, right? How do you feel? And if people feel a sense of energy, hope, excitement, they are going to be so much more interested and open to learning, right? But if people get, you know, shut down, feel quiet, all those things.
I left. I left after on day two. I was like, I just can't do this. Yep. It was like literally, and I think because it brought back some of those feelings.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I started looking at myself going, all right, everybody here is jumping up and down. Everybody here is like, they drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Why am I not, like, again, that spotlight was on me. I felt,
yeah,
because I'm not.
Well, what I love about that is like, I don't know about you, but especially as being an introvert in an extroverted world, we created an event this past year we called EncourageerCon, and we're going to keep doing it. But we said openly, it is an introvert-friendly event.
Love that.
And so we had introvert moments built into the schedule.
That's awesome.
Where the anticipation was. I was like, we had a corner for extroverts. Like, you guys that are extroverts, all you guys want to do is process with your 5 to 10 closest new friends. But introverts, we are giving you permission to have what we call the great disappearing break. And that is to go walk around the conference center, go walk around the parking lot, go lay in the grass somewhere. Do not talk to anybody. And I said, introverts, we love you, but shut up. Leave us alone for just a little bit and let us process. And I can tell you, so many of the people were just, they love the conference, but they would speak to like, I finally felt like I was at home because we were being celebrated, right? And I do think that is a missing thing. So I know that live events are in your future, and I have a feeling a lot of the people who will be attracted to your work and getting your help will probably be very similar to you. So I have a feeling you're going to take really good care of the introverts along the way too.
I love that you said that, because it's so funny when I'm on stage, I'm a totally different energy, right?
Yeah.
It's like, and again, I go back to you know, the creator versus consumer.
Right.
And it's interesting. I think literally the week after that, I went to 10X Stages conference and in Miami. And that one, completely different vibe and feel.
Yep.
And I was soaking that up like a sponge.
Yep.
That was like, I was like, thank you, Jesus. Yeah. This is amazing. I'm like taking notes. I'm like, this is gonna change my life. And Tony was like, dude, yep, y'all drank the Kool-Aid, yep, over here. Anyway,
100%.
It's so cool. Okay, so do you do more executive? Do you do more coaching for executives or for more entrepreneurs and business owners?
Yes. So about 50% of my coaching is on the entrepreneur side, executive side. Interestingly enough, that oftentimes in my conversation with Amberly, we talked about micro niches, which is smaller groups within a bigger niche. And my micro niche is often helping leaders to make big decisions. Now, what's interesting is you don't see that on my website a lot, because it's specifically my micro niche is helping leaders make big decisions they don't want to talk to anybody else about yet. Mm. That's one of my micro niches. Sounds weird, but it's one of those things where I find that I'm really good at that, and I am a safe place to help them make the decision. Now, you know, oftentimes it's not, you know, some moral issue. It's like they're thinking about maybe potentially moving headquarters, or they're thinking about making a major change in their organization and their business. And They just want to process it through first. It's not that they don't want to talk to their spouse about it, but they know if they talk to their spouse about it, they'll be supportive, but they'll start looking at school districts and real estate apps and all of those things, right? Like, they don't want to cause that until they're a little bit further down. So I do 50% of my coaching is with high-level leaders, oftentimes helping them make big decisions. And then 50% of my coaching is with coaches, speakers, and content creators, helping them help them take their business to that next level. So it really, I've got a short attention span, so it's really nice to have some variety. But those are really kind of my two key areas.
Gotcha. Have you done much in the way of like career coaching at all?
So under that kind of the umbrella of kind of the coaching of leaders, oftentimes I always say the work-life balance thing is almost laughable because it's all life. It's all life. Our work, like if we're entrepreneurs, it's all life, right?
Correct.
So to be able to say, you know, I call myself a success coach, just because I help people to identify what do they identify as success and then help them to build a life that's for that. Now, is that a life coach? Well, yeah, we talk about life, but we're getting clear on success. So I call myself a success coach. But yes, you know, in my podcast, my main podcast is called Dream, Think, Do. And that's because I want to help people dream bigger, think better, and do more of what they're put on the planet to do. Thing is, I'm pretty expensive.
I love the name of your podcast, by the way. And you guys make sure you go check out his podcast, Dream, Think, Do. Let's give it a 5-star review. And I think you have another one too, Encouraging the Encouragers.
Yeah, that one is specifically for coaches, speakers, and content creators.
Okay.
And that is just short, real-time stories, strategies. I'll do a session with a coach and I'll hop on and do a quick podcast because of an idea that you know, we talked about with this client. I want the audience to hear that. So that one's more of a niched podcast.
Is that kind of like, are you essentially doing like a coaching with a client?
Yeah.
You're coaching them.
Yeah.
But you turn that and you repurpose that into a podcast.
So basically, what I will do is I will get done with get done with a coaching session, and I might have an hour between coaching sessions. I will think to myself, okay, what's something that we just talked about? What seemed to really help that client? Mm-hmm. And then I'll just hop on, hit record, and say, hey, just got off a call, or just got off this session.
So you're doing
real quick, and I try to keep them about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I record them in my office, sometimes in my studio, sometimes I record them while I'm walking my dog, and just say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. This is something that can help. Go for it. But it's only for coaches, speakers, content creators. That's who I consider the encouragers. And my goal is to help more encouragers become the well-paid encouragers they deserve to be. Mm. So Dream, Think, Do is kind of my big corporate podcast that you know, wildly blessed to say at the top 0.5% of all podcasts. And that one is more, again, for anybody that's wanting to dream bigger, think better, or do more of what they're put on the planet to do. But Encouraging the Encouragers is just this little, it's a little party that we're having over here. Everybody's welcome, but you're probably only going to find it valuable if you're a coach, speaker, or content creator.
Well, and I love the names on these two. I was speaking with Kim Walsh Phillips.
I don't know if you know her.
Yeah. So I was speaking with her, and she was looking at my podcast and stuff like that. She's like, you need to change the name of your podcast. I'm like, come on, man. I'm like, I don't want to hear that. I've been doing it for, you know, it's been 6 years, and I'm like, I don't want to change it. But like, and I get it. I kind of like, so it's the Who You Know show.
Right.
But it's Who Ya with a Y-A.
Right.
So I think when people are even searching it, they're typing in Who You Know.
Yep.
Not Who Ya Know.
Right.
Right. So like searchability, whatever. I think there's some issues there.
Yeah.
It doesn't clearly say what it is.
Right.
Like everybody's heard the saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
They've heard that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. Well, what's the podcast about?
Yeah.
You know, you still have to describe it. So like,
I would agree with that.
I think the
point.
Dream, Think, Do.
Yeah.
That tells me what the podcast is about.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily, but I kind of get a gist of it, just those three words.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the name.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It means a lot. But I would also say, like, I agree with what Kim's saying to a point. But you also know that, you know, when designers initially designed the Nike swoosh,
right,
nobody liked it because it didn't make any sense, right?
Like, what's
it only made sense because they stayed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And who you know, you can make the argument, doesn't make any sense, or you should have used you instead of ya. Yeah. At the same time, you've done 600 freaking episodes. And it's one of those things where some things seem crazy in the beginning, but seem self-evident after time, especially if somebody's willing to stay with it. And you can change your name. I would encourage you to put your name with the podcast name, because people are going to start knowing your name more and more.
Correct.
And that's going to be the thing they start to search for. So just put your name in. The Who You Know Show.
With Trevor Houston. Yep.
Absolutely. Start putting that in. And that is, you don't have to make a big change. You don't have to change any URLs, anything like that. Yeah. But people are going to start to know you. I guarantee this, whether you want to call this a prophetic declaration or whatever, people are going to start knowing your name a lot more. And they're going to start searching for that, and they will find you.
Well, thank you. That is what I like to call another mic drop. He's putting it out there. He's putting it out there. And I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah.
So tell me about, or tell the audience where they can connect with you. What's the best way for them to reach out to you? And do you have any, do you have anything that you want to promote, or any courses anything that you want to highlight?
I appreciate that very much. So one of the best places to start is just go to MitchMatthews.com.
Okay.
And you probably put that in the show notes too. That's kind of where everything's housed, and you can find out more about my podcasts and those kinds of things that we're doing. There's a bunch of free resources there too. So I just encourage people to do that. If somebody has been listening and they're like, you know what, I've always thought about being a coach, or I've always thought about being a speaker, but I'm not sure I'd be a good fit for that, or I don't know whether I should try that or not, we actually created an assessment. And we've been helping other coaches for over a decade. And we just realized that there are just certain things that set some people up for more success than others.
Okay.
And so we created an assessment. It's actually very easy to take, but it will give you a score. We call it the Coaching Predictability of Success Assessment. That's a mouthful, the CPSA. And people can go to MitchMatthews.com/CPSA. And what it does is it gives you a predictability of whether you'd be successful as a coach and a speaker. Now, some people, they know that we sell training for coaches. And so they're like, it seems like you're trying to convince some people to not be coaches. And that's right. Mm. We don't think that everybody should be coaches. And for some people, if you get a low score, it doesn't mean you're a bad human. Just means you're the chances of you being successful are not great. So we've saved you a bunch of time, right? And probably saved you a bunch of money, right? But if you score high, then we encourage you and show you different ways to be able to do that, to be able to take next steps. Some of those are free resources. Some of those are getting involved with some of our training, those kinds of things. But we just found that for us, we want the right people to get involved with coaching and speaking, because there's more need than ever. But people need to have the right tools, and I believe the right people need to get into the industry, because when we see that, then we see a lot of success.
Well, it's a huge industry. It's growing
like right
crazy rapid. Like I saw some stats. I can't remember what they were, but it was like $1 trillion industry or something that. Like the coaching and courses and all that, especially like after the pandemic, you know, the online course world.
Amazing.
Through the roof.
Right? Absolutely. Right? And it's one of those, well, some statistics that I've seen said that $20 billion
something
will
like
be spent in the United States on personal development this year. This year. $20 billion.
And why do you think that is? Do you think it's like, I have a hunch. Yeah. I think people don't want to be working in corporate America. I think they got a taste of reality.
Yeah.
They thought they were good. And people are getting let go and furloughed and fired from these companies, stock-owned companies that are making financial decisions and laying everybody off because of whatever's going on in the in the market. So they're tired of corporate America.
Well, yeah.
And they're trying to make a shift.
Well, that's the thing, is I think obviously the last couple of years has been hard on people, you know, in COVID, obviously terrible. At the same time, though, I do think it served as a significant wake-up call for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
To realize, hey, you know, kind of like me in the pharmaceutical world, is like, I cannot keep doing what I'm doing because a little part of me is dying every day. My wife, literally, one night, I'll never forget, she said, I am scared. And I was like, we were good financially, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, what are you scared about? And she goes, your fire is going out.
Uh-oh.
And she's like, I don't want to see your fire go out. We got to find a way to light that fire again. Mm-hmm. And I think COVID was one of those things that hit a lot of people where it was a wake-up call to say, I'm not happy. I'm not satisfied. Mm-hmm. And maybe tomorrow is not guaranteed, right? Maybe that I need to make some decisions to make some changes so that I can do it. And yes, I mean, it's a wild time for a lot of people, but also there are a lot of companies that are doing tremendous right now. There are you'll see the media talk about, they'll bring up recession or they'll, bring up a lot of companies that are hurting. But there are just as many, if not more, companies that are thriving, but that doesn't make good news, right? So it's one of those things where there's a lot of people being successful as individuals too. So it's that whole thing of just going, what are you going to focus on? And what's your next step? Like, what do you want to create? It's a little bit of the question I asked you. Like, what's the vision? Like, what do you want to create? So as somebody's listening to this, I just encourage them, whether, they're thinking about coaching, speaking, or, being a content creator, or whether it's something else entirely, you've got that thing in you. Don't let the fire go out. Find ways to allow yourself to be a novice, learn from somebody, learn from Trevor, keep learning from Trevor, right? And it's going to allow you to go further, go faster than you ever thought possible.
I love it. So what's the name of the assessment again?
Then go to MitchMatthews.com/CPSA. It's the Coaching Predictability of Success Assessment.
Which coaching is way of too Predictability long. Of Success Coaching Assessment. You need to take that, okay?
Take it.
And also go download his podcast, Dream Think Do, and encouraging the encouragers. Make sure you subscribe. Give him a 5-star review. Anything less than a 5 is a failure, okay? So it has to be 5. Or just don't do it.
Right.
Exactly. That's all I'm going to tell you. 5 or nothing. We appreciate you. And Mitch, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for the honor. Keep doing the great work that you're doing, man. You are making an impact, and I have a feeling it's just begun.
Man, thank you so much. Guys, that's the show. It's all about who you know. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Who You Know Show podcast. My name is Trevor Houston, and if you've enjoyed this episode, consider subscribing wherever you listen and leave us a positive review to help us keep the mics on in the studio. Until next week, that's the show. It's all about who you know.